Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:05 PM, and that is Pacific Summer Time, and today is March 18th. Well, Jay Powell yesterday said that you don't have to worry about inflation, and the bond market said today, we don't believe you. There might be a more pejorative way of explaining that, but I'll avoid that for the moment. But the reality is that I personally thought yesterday that probably the bonds might receive a bid, and that was wrong. There's no question about that. So we've had a clear break on the upside for yields. Now, it did pair the move towards the end of the day, but the reality is that bond market traders really don't have an incentive to get in there and buy until they know that the Federal Reserve has got their back. And based upon the statements yesterday, that's just not the case. So what would be the catalyst to really initiate a change of heart by the Federal Reserve? I think that's sort of the question that's now being examined by markets. It's obviously not a move higher of more than 100 basis points in Treasury yields. So maybe it's 150 basis points in Treasury yields. Maybe the yield has to get all the way up to 2%. One thing for certain, though, is that people are starting to extrapolate the trend, and I'm hearing increasingly people looking at 2 or 2.5% as the terminal value for this move, or at least the terminal value for when the Federal Reserve might intervene to support the Treasury market. But one way we can also think about this is that the Treasury market isn't their main priority. Instead, perhaps they're looking at the stock market, and the Nasdaq remains a relative underperformer. Now, that's important because leaders tend to lead in both directions, and generally they lead for a reason. Well, the main reason why the Nasdaq has outperformed so spectacularly in the last 13 years is simple enough. We've had this incredible trend of innovation, and technological innovation depends on two things. It depends on lots of smart people coming up with lots of new ideas, and that's obviously something that we're in no short supply of. And as prices rise, the number of new, bold, innovative ideas accelerates. But in order to get technology to market and to approach commercialization, what you also need is money. Lots of it, easy access to it, and make it cheap. And that has certainly been the case over the course of the last decade. And that's been the primary driver of the growth trend. So especially when you have low interest rates and no competition from higher yielding assets, then the potential returns from growth outpace that from the guaranteed returns from extra low yields. That drive towards yield and the demand for an uncorrelated asset and for alternatives in a low interest rate environment has really created a massive surge in demand for growth. And obviously the Nasdaq is loaded with those types of companies that have been the primary beneficiaries of this evolution. The advent of Tesla into the S&P 500 was obviously a very big event, and it's also particularly relevant that since its accession to the S&P 500, it has done nothing but decline. So there was a lot of buy the rumor and sell the news going on in there, and it was in negative territory again in here today, so countermanding the pop on the upside that we had yesterday. Then we can think about the incredible success of ETFs like the ARK Innovation ETF, which is up to a market cap of $23 billion, or at least maybe the better way to say that is it's still at a market cap of that much, despite the fact that we've had a meaningful pullback. One thing that we have certainly seen over the course of the last year has been the advent of the actively managed ETF, and that's a decidedly different innovation within the ETF industry than we've had over the course of the last decade. The last decade was all about passive investing. But a number of the new and most popular ETFs are actively managed. So they have certainly been able to really engage with the focus on a smaller number of companies by being more actively managed, but that has done nothing to preserve the their business model from rising interest rates. So the whole suite of ARK ETFs, whether it was the ARK Innovations Fund or the FinTech Fund, they were all down significantly in here again today. And the pressure coming to bear on these innovation sectors is likely to remain a factor until we in fact see that bond yields are going to start to come back down again. So I initiated a short in the NASDAQ just as a way of both keeping my eye on this system, hedging some of my exposure to gold and silver, and then also to potentially profit from this rise in yields. Then there's another way of thinking about it. There are some other actively managed ETFs that look to profit from the rising yield curve environment. Or at least the way that these kinds of funds are created is that they buy tips and then write options on them. And that has been a rather successful strategy, and certainly up to a market cap now of over $2 billion. These types of instrument are certainly starting to attract interest because the yield curve spread is certainly trending higher. But it's not just trending higher in the USA. It's trending higher everywhere. So obviously there's a lot of variability in the shape of some of these curves. So I've prepared a number of these charts. So for example, here's what the Australian yield curve spread looks like. So it's right in the region of the peaks from over much of the last 20 years. In fact, it's really only been higher on one occasion since 1993. That really tells us just how accommodative conditions have been in Australia. And we have a similar condition to the USA in Canada, and there's been a meaningful move higher. But then when we think about the UK, for example, we're only in the low foothills of breaking out. So there is certainly an argument that the banking sectors of the UK and of Europe more generally are likely to benefit as these yield curve spreads start to trend higher. And we're certainly seeing evidence of that. There was also the fact that companies like Deutsche Bank were largely and popularly anticipated to go bust or have to be nationalized. And yet the Eurostoxx Banks Index continues to march higher. And Deutsche Bank announced today that their profitability has exceeded expectations by a fairly considerable manner, and it is breaking out of this rounding base formation from over the last 2 years. The Topix Banks Index was also in positive territory today and clearly extending the recovery. So it's a meaningful bounce now from the lower side of a decade and more long range. So there is the potential that we're at the peak of regulatory obstacles for the banking sector. There's the clear scope that regulations for banks will perhaps get easier as we move forward. When then we look at the oil price, I suspect it's going to be rather the opposite. I've been rather leery of giving credence to the view that oil is now in a secular bull market. I just don't think that we have the conditions for a secular bull market, because in order to have a secular bull market, you need a couple of things. You need supply inelasticity and rising demand. Well, We have artificial supply in elasticity at present, so that has helped the price to rebound in a really emphatic fashion, going up from 20 to over 70 in the space of less than a year is certainly an impressive rebound. And it's being driven by increasing demand. But this is the recovery from an artificially low source of demand. So, in many respects, the oil market reflects the kinds of disruptions that we've had in the wider economy, because we're certainly getting inflationary pressures rising, and not least because of the year-over-year comparisons. And that is going to continue to create these kinds of loopy conclusions from economic data. The Federal Reserve is betting that as we move through the middle portion of this year, that the economic data is going to settle back down and there won't be a big inflationary outcome. The bond market is not willing to take that risk and is rapidly unwinding longs and getting short of bonds in order to preserve themselves against the potential. I'm sure that bond investors will be more than willing to buy the dip if the Federal Reserve steps in or if inflationary pressures start surprising on the downside. But in order for inflation to surprise on the downside, then the economy will have to get worse. So perhaps the Federal Reserve is also basing its conclusion on the impending problem of what to do about delinquencies and forbearance in the mortgage markets. The normalization of economic activity in the aftermath of the pandemic is not going to be like flicking a switch. There are going to be difficulties along the way, and easy monetary policy will be essential. So the bond market is in fact predicting that we're just going to have more inflation and that the Federal Reserve really is serious about chasing that inflationary trend overall. I think that it would be a mistake to conclude that oil is in a secular bull market simply because we know where the oil is. But then when we look at the banking sector, I think that there is a solid argument for thinking that we are probably at that peak level of regulation. So banks have popped on the upside. They were off their highs in here today. So the sell-off in the Nasdaq is starting to take a toll. And we may yet see some additional consolidation because we've seen a really very impressive advance. But the reality is that many people want to live their best life after the pandemic. Many people will now be looking back at the pandemic as being the most scary and also the most significant memory in their economic lives. Prior to 2020, people were still talking about the global financial crisis, and now people will talk more about the pandemic, and they'll want to live their best life. So they'll want to certainly preserve more and save more to ensure that they have the wherewithal to survive the kind of shock that came through just in case there's another virus. But in between, they will also wish to spend more, enjoy themselves, make the best of the most of life, so that in between these anticipated problems, then people can enjoy themselves. So why not have a nicer car, a nicer home, a nicer holiday? And shouldn't we all deserve a nicer home and a nicer car? Well, that means there'll be more demand for credit. And the only way that banks will be able to ensure the growth of credit is with looser regulations. And of course, that will come grudgingly. And it will not all happen in one go. But looser banking regulation is probably something we can anticipate. Generally speaking, we don't get peaks in property prices until leverage increases, until lending standards relax, and until prices become very, very unaffordable. And we're not at that point yet. With the prospect of forbearance, there could potentially be increasing supply coming into the market. Or then, of course, there's also the impending number of people who are going to be retiring and downsizing and moving, and that could certainly pick up as we come out of the pandemic. So I think we are due some consolidation in stock markets. The weakness is being led by the NASDAQ, and the NASDAQ did best because of loose credit and rising interest rates, and the then of course the condition, the speculation, of course, is how long will these rising interest rates and rising yields become a factor. I don't believe the Federal Reserve is going to become active in the market until we see a pullback of at least 10% on the S&P 500, because we have ample evidence of that figure being something that creates a sense of urgency. But it is worth considering that the price right now is only a day off the all-time peak, and the price is at 3,900. It could easily pull back by 300 or 400 points, and it still wouldn't be in the region of the trend mean or indeed the peak from the previous range. So it's quite possible that we get a pullback of 10% in the S&P 500. That is unlikely to be enough to really stoke a movement by the Fed, because that's what we had right after Jay Powell got the job. The market pulled back by 10%, and it didn't shake him. It wasn't until we had a pullback of 20% in 2018 that the Federal Reserve really became active. So that potentially means that the S&P 500 could pull back by 800 points before the Federal Reserve will move into action. And as bond yields rise, that has to be at least a potential possibility, because we are now getting towards pressure points as the innovation shares start to pull back. And of course, that does raise the question, what can we anticipate from precious metals? Because the gold price was quite volatile in here today. On the one hand, it should do well when people are worried about inflation. But it's really more about the credence people view or give to the view that we're going to have negative real interest rates for a prolonged period of time. So gold prices should do well if we have negative real interest rates. One of the primary reasons that they have not been doing well since August is because investors have been worried that negative real interest rates would not persist. Well, the Federal Reserve has clearly stated they are not going to raise rates, and that is despite rising inflationary pressures. So that does suggest that we're going to have negative real interest rates for the foreseeable future. It should act as a tailwind for gold, or at least a support. At the other side of that equation, there is obviously some unwillingness to buy gold, because there hasn't been quite the same need for an inflation hedge. But I do wonder how long that's going to last for. Well, we haven't seen clear upward dynamics yet, and gold has work to do. It has to push back above the $1,850 area to push back above the trend mean, break the sequence of lower rally highs, and put in a larger rally than we've seen from the recent lows. Every time it has bounced from a big psychological round number like 1900, 1800, it has bounced by about 100 and something dollars. So it's clearly got scope to continue to push back up in here. One thing that could potentially act as a bullish catalyst for gold is further weakness in Bitcoin. Now, the price got all the way back up towards the $60,000 level in here today, but it failed to push through it. And I do think that Bitcoin is a risk asset. It is highly correlated with interest in the speculative area of the market, and Ethereum appears to be putting in a lower high, and it had the downside key reversal 4 days ago. Then we can also think about the fact that if innovation is pulling back, there's no particular reason why Bitcoin should retain its relative strength. So we do have the real risk now that there is a bigger pullback looming in cryptocurrencies, and that could act as a tailwind for gold, since a lot of that hedging and speculative interest for gold has been taken by Bitcoin over the course of the last while. I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.